Okay, we're beginning the two dads at the top of Tzadikei Mutadu. So, referencing back to our Mishnah, Gazal Paran Mi'uberet V'yaldah. So now the Gemara begins with a bright, the Tanur Rabbanan. HaGuzel Rachel V'gazuzah Paran V'yaldah. Now the Bach changes the gears, so just to read, HaGuzel Rachel V'gazuzah V'yaldah. But either way, tell you about an animal that had a situation in which it was either pregnant or it was carrying around the wool. Then, what's the status with regards to, number one, the animal, and number two is the vlads, or the gizot that are going to be sheared off of this animal. So we have a three-way machlokas hatanayim. So the first opinion is the opinion of Rabbi Meir, mishalem uta ved gizotea ved vladotea. They have to pay for the animal itself, as well as the shearings and the vladot. So that's the position of Rabbi Meir. We're going to see in the Gemara what it means, but it's, from Rabbi Meir, it sounds like you have to pay for everything, including the shevach that was or that was carried out at the time or happened in the possession of the gazlan. Now, Rehuda Omer, Ro'in Utak, Yilahi Shuma is Tobekesif. No, I'm sorry, skip. Gizelach was there in it. The Gizelach goes back the way it is. Man, whatever it is now, that's how you hand it back. Now Rashi points out, and the Gemara is going to do this later on, that it's obvious that Rabbi Yehuda cannot believe that you just, now that the animal is sheared, or the animal gave birth, that you just hand back the animal. You can't say, Harishal Chalat Panecho. Because Rashi points out, the Lekha Deman Damar, Kula Gazlanim, Batsir Mishat Gazela Yishalmu. There's nobody believes that a Gazlan will pay less than the amount of that was there or stolen at the moment that he, Mishat Gazela, he stole it. Meaning that if he stole it and it was pregnant, or he stole it and it was carrying around the gizot, there's no way you could believe that you can hand back the animal and not have to compensate for the gizot or for the vlad or an impregnated animal. Maybe not to pay for the shevach that accumulated while it was in the hands of the gazlan, but at least the shevach that was there at the moment of the zelah, you should have to pay for it. So the Gemara is going to explain this, but that Rabbi Yehuda believes you give the animal back and then you have to give money. It's to compensate for the difference between the current value of the animal and what it was worth when it had these items with it.
There is a concept of takat shavim to
certain. Right, but even in takat shavim, you still have to compensate. Right, you have to compensate. That doesn't mean just means you don't have to return the item, but you still have to pay. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Roino Ta Kiil Hishuma Itzlo Bekesef. Rabbi Shimon says we look at it as if it was assessed to him and it we were paid in money. Okay, and what the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is, the Gemara we'll get to on the second half of the daf today. My time with the Rabbi Meir. What is the position of Rabbi Meir? Is it Mishum Kasavar Shino Ibn Komo Omei? Right, one possibility of Rabbi Meir is that there is no Kinyan by Shinoi. If there's no Kinyan by Shinoi, that means that all the Shevach that accumulated even after it was in the possession of the Gazlan, that accrues to the Baalim, belongs to the Baalim. And that's why he has to repay everything, not just the animal b'shad gzeilah, but even the benefit that accrued after that moment. O dilma, b'alma shinoi konis. Generally, he believes that there is shinoi konis. Ahoko kansu duka konis. Over here, it's not. It's not from the gazlan that he stole an item that had was already in progression of creating the shevach, and to reconnect him to pay the rest of the shevach, the ma'inaf kamino. What's the nafkamin between these two positions? The hecha, the kachrasha, mikachash. Right? But the nafkamin is when it gets worse. If things deteriorate. Now, if you believe shinoi b'mkomo omeid, that there is no kinyan here, then it's irrelevant whether the value goes up or goes down, it's all to the baalim. Right, exactly. Asher achav b'nefesh, it's still your animal, you hand it back to him. On the other hand, if you believe that it's a knas is only relevant when the value increases, then you're actually punishing him or penalizing him by making him pay for the excess sheva that came even after Shad Zelar, after the Shinui. On the other hand, when it gets mikash kachosh, then when it gets weaker, then that's not going to be a knas, and we're going to say it's Mishad Zelar. And the gazlan is going to pay like the moment that he stole it, and he'll have to pay for a pregnant animal or a loaded animal that's got the gizot on it, and the weakness or the deterioration will be his problem, will be a loss to the gazlan. Teshma, gazal behema v'eskina, avadim v'eskinu, mishalem kishat akzila. So a person steals an animal, and it gets older. It's an eved, and he gets older, mishalem kishat akzila. It's konet, time to gzila. And he pays based on the item that he stole. Rabbi Meir Omer, Bavadim Omer Lo, Harei Chalav Benecha. When it comes to Bavadim, he hands back the evidence and says, here's your evidence back. Milu Be'ema, Kshat Gzila. Whereas on the other hand, a Be'ema, you pay Kshat Gzila. If you believe like Rabbi Meir, the opinion of Rabbi Meir is premised or based on the fact that Shino b'mukamo omeid, that Shino is not koneh here, and it remains in your possession, afilu behema nami, then why can't he say by behema also, or ishachad lefanecho? Elav shema mina, because of Rabbi Meir, Shino is koneh. So it must be then that Shino is koneh. V'hachad kantzuhu d'kakonis. So now, there's a knas that he imposes on the right, on the gazlan, that even though technically he was kone the shatak zela, nevertheless he still pays for the premium or the excess that goes on beyond that beyond the time of zela, and that should have accrued to the gazlan. We penalize him and say pay that back to the bali. If it's mikdash kafkish, if it goes down in value, which is the case here, the behemah got older, we're going to say pay kishatag zela, because you can't say arishal kafenecha, because the shinoi was koneh. Right now, by avadim, that's what your question is, by avadim, why is it that he can say arishal kafenecha? The Gemara gets to it in a second. So he says, Imrei, Rabbi Meir, l'divrehem derabanan kamaru. Maybe Rabbi Meir is speaking to Rabbanan in their position. This is not his position, but he's saying, according to you, my position is that Shinoi is not koneh, and therefore he can say, Arei Shalcha Lefanecha. Ah, why over here did he say Behema? That is Kishat HaGzila. He says, V'afilu Behema Nami. Even a Behema also I could say, Arei Shalcha Lefanecha. Ela L'dibchu, according to you, the Rabbanon, Dami Tu Shinoi Koneh. You says that Shinoi is koneh. At least admit to me. Odili Mihad Ba'abdo Demikakarka Dami. At least by Avodim, they are like karka. Vekarka in an exelet. And karka is, you're unable to steal karka. Vimrile Rabbanan, look, avdo kimetalkale dami. And that's the Rabbanan's response to him is no. Evid has the status of mitalkale. So now, based on this, right, you could have two possibilities in what Rabbi Meir's position is. Rabbi Meir's position either is that Shinoi is koneh. If Shinoi is koneh, then you have a difference between Behema and Eved. Why do you have a difference between Behema and Eved? By Behema, we're going to say pay kishat ha'gzila, right? Because you said Shinoi is koneh. So he pays kishat ha'gzila. Why by an Eved can he say Arishel Chalupanecho? Eved is different because Eved is like karko. If it's like karko, karko cannot be stolen. And same thing by an Eved. Eved is like kimakarke dami. Because it's kimakarke dami, can't be stolen, and that's why you can say Arishel Chalupanecho. Or you could say that Rabbi Meir believes Shinoi is not koneh. Right? If Shinoi is not koneh, then understandable why the Eved is Harishal Chalifanech. But why by the Behema, right, is it Kishat Gzela? That would say that's the Divrei Rabbana. That's not his opinion. His opinion would be true. By Behema too, it would be Harishal Chalifanech. You, the Rabbana, should have explained it. You should explain it this way, that true. If you say by a Eved at least, agree to me by Eved that it should be Arishal Chalifanecha because Eved is Kimakarke Dami. And the Chamin disagree and say Eved is Kimetazale Dami. And we've seen this other places in the Gemara about this argument. Everybody in general, we believe that Eved is like Karka, but there are exceptions. I mean, that Eved is not totally like Karka. That even though you might believe that Eved has a din of Karka for Kinyonim. Nevertheless, you could believe that in this instance, for Gzela, that Eved is Kimetazale Dami. When we say Eved is Kikarka, it doesn't mean always and literally that he, you know, Eved equals Karka and there will be no differences. But no, that it takes on the form of Karka in certain instances for Kinyanim. And possibly for other Dinim, it takes on, like for Shavuot and for other issues that come up between Karka and Metazale. Maybe he has a din of Karka, but then that, there might be in cases like Gzela that he might have a din of Metazale. We should see the Rabbanan over here say that he has a din of Metazale. Alright, Tashma, let's try another way to explain Rabbi Meir. It's Bo'adu Edom, if it's Tzva'o Shachor. Shachor Tzva'o Edom. This is a Mishnah coming up later. That if he hired the dyer to make it red, and in the end he made it black. Or he may hire him to make it black, and in the end he makes it red. Rabbi Meir Omer, Notein lo Dmei Tzmaro. Dmei Tzmaro in. Dmei Tzmaro v'Shachor. Oh, look. He says to basically the craftsman who was dyeing the wool was Koneh, at the moment he dyed it wrong. Why? Because, quote unquote, he becomes like a gezlan. Right? Because there's a shinoi. At that point in time, he did something outside the instructions of the Baalim. Once he did that, he was Koneh with the shinoi. He's Koneh with the shinoi, and from that point forward, right, it does not belong to the Baalim anymore, it belongs to the craftsman. The craftsman has to repay the Baalim, basically wool, raw wool, that he received from the Baalim. The other possibility would have been that he has to return the wool plus the shevach. Now, even though he dyed it black instead of red, black instead of red, there is still value created in the wool, because whatever color he dyed it, somebody else wants that dyed wool. So we don't say to him, repay the wool with the value that you created. No, we just say it's cut off at the time that he went and dyed it inappropriately. So that's the case. What do you see? You see that his shinoi is koneh. That's what he's saying. V'isakadaka sava Rabbi Meir shinoi enu koneh. If you believe that Rabbi Meir believes that shinoi enu koneh, meis moro ushvachobai lemeitavlei. He should have paid for the semer plus the increased value. Because if shinoi enu koneh, then it accrued to the baalim. It's harishal kalafanech in a sense, but in the positive sense, because the value of the wool did go up, and he should have to return the wool plus the new value that he has created. Elav shma mina. It's clear from this that kasav Rabbi Meir shinoi koneh. Rabbi Meir clearly believes that shinoi is koneh. The kokonis. Right there, here it is a knot that is imposing on him. Shma mina. So therefore, you have to explain here. So let's go back to now our cases up above when you stole a Rachel. Because of the or Vyoda, that's the first case where Rabbi Meir says it. So now, according to the Gemara, that's a knas. So when he steals the animal, there's a shinoi in koneh. So technically, he would have to pay kishat gzela, which is a pregnant animal or a loaded animal with a wolf, a carrying animal. But we say, nevertheless, if the value goes up, if it increases in value, we say we don't want the gazlan to benefit from that. So we say he has to pay, as a knas, he has to pay the additional amount that accrued, even though it really belongs to him. Still, we're koneh him to pay that additional amount. Now, if it went down in value, what would we say? We say shinoi is koneh, according to Rabbi Meir. That means the deterioration in value will be the gazlan's problem, and he's got to pay the shatak zela, and he's the one who loses out in the deterioration from the time of the shatak zela until now. Number two, the brace that we brought before about gazal beima v'skina karka. Right, I mean, Avadim, Beskinu, and Behema, Beskina. So then, by the case of Behema, we say he's got to pay Keshatak Zeilat. That's no problem, that we can understand, because he says Shinoi Koneh. The Eved, he can say Arishal Chafen Echla, because he believes that Eved is Kimekarke Dami. So if it's like Karko, in an Ixelet, and there's no Shinoi. Then it comes to our case here of the dying by the craftsman. The case of the craftsman, what's the case? The case is that there's a shinoi. If there's a shinoi, all he has to return is the semer. Now you're saying, why isn't there any, right? Why isn't there any knas over here? So Rashi states it over here. We'll see it again in the next Amud. Vachakata kanet, vamitnu obitzva, lav gazlanu, v'lav kotehu. He's not intentionally stealing, and he's not a sinner. He made a mistake. He was a craftsman. He made a mistake. He might be a shogeg, but he's not an amazee. The knas is imposed on a gazlan who intentionally steals, is a chuteh. That's when we impose the knas. Over here by the craftsman, we're going to let the din d'oraita stand, that shinoi is koneh, and all he has to pay back is it's mei semer, because he wasn't intending to steal, he wasn't intending to cause problems for the baalim. So we just go back to the din d'oraita, we don't impose that additional knas on the individual. Alright, so now, ikid amre, halo yibayman. That was not a question for us. Mid apich, Rav, because Rav flips around the positions. What does that mean? He flips around the positions later on in the Gemara. Right, but Zani Gazal Para Vizkina Avadim Vizkinu Mishalem Kishatak Zela Divrei Rabbi Meir. So he says this wasn't a question for us because Rabbi Meir, Rav flips around the positions in this Mishnah later on and says Rabbi Meir is the author of this position, which is Para Vizkina Avadim Vizkinu Mishalem Kishatak Zela. So if he pays Keshatak Zeila, whether it's Avadim or whether it's Behema, then it's obvious that Rabbi Meir believes Shinoi is Koneh. You have to say Shinoi is Koneh, otherwise you can't explain his position by Avadim and by Behema. So Vadai, the Rabbi Meir, she knew he couldn't. But how can't do the Kalkani slave? Ah, he kai ba'ilon. So what's our question then? If we could prove from that Mishnah further on that Rabbi Meir believes she knew he's koneh, then what was the whole question that we asked before in the position of Rabbi Meir? What were we unsure about in the position of Rabbi Meir? This is how kai ba'ilon. Ki kai ba'ilon. The only time he's koneh is when he does it intentionally. Oh, well, with shokeg lo kanis. By shokeg we are not kanis. Oh, Dilma. Afilo, with shokeg nami kanis. Even in a case of shokeg, you are also kanis. So what's the case of shokeg? So Rashi gives an example here of a case of shokeg is, vishalakach, lokeach shalakach migazlan, vishbicha. Well, he's actually zula. Person buys hot property, buys stolen property, and he increases the value. He upgrades the field that he bought. Even he doesn't know that it is stolen property. There is a shogeg. He should have probably looked into it more to know that the person who sold him had proper title to the property. He didn't do that. So now he bought stolen property and he's increasing or improving the value of the property. So Tashma, I have an answer for you. Chamisha govim mina mechurarim. There are five people who are allowed to collect from unencumbered property, right? From free property, mishuchrarim, right? What are these? Veilei peirot. When we're dealing with peirot, v'shevach peirot, v'makabel alav lazun ben ishto, ubat ishto, v'yed chob she'im ba'achrayut, uktubat isha she'im ba'achrayut. Right, so now, we'll explain them. Some of them we won't be able to explain, but we'll say, first of all, we'll say, peirot and shevach peirot, let's leave out for right now. But makabel alav lazun ben ishto, right, a person who marries and there's a stepchild involved and he's makabel, he accepts responsibility to feed his ben ishto, right, the son of his wife, meaning his stepchild. If he obligates himself to pay or to feed the stepchild, then if he passes away, then the entitlement to that chob is only out of the shukharim, is only out of the ben chorim, the unencumbered property. The chob doesn't have to worry about it. Ubat ishto, again the same thing where he has a stepdaughter, right, a marriage with a wife who already has a child and he agrees to feed her. Get chob she'in bo achrayut. Get chob is a regular debt document that is lacking achrayut, that is lacking the encumbering of this person's property as collateral, collateralized property, all of his property for the get chob. In general, this is a machlokas, we're going to see this in a second, but it's a machlokas whether achrayut is an automatic assumption of any loan. Nobody would lend money without having all their property be collateral for it. So we say then that if it's not included in the get chob, then it's ta'ut sofer. Sofer made a mistake, and every get chob, if you have a document that says that I loaned you money, automatically all your property is encumbered to me. Here it's mishubadim. On the other hand, there's another person who believes no, that it's the option of the lender. The lender can either lend with achrayut or he can lend without achrayut, meaning that he can lend with encumberment of the property or not encumberment of the property. Or the recourse, right? Ktubat isha, shame ba'achrayut, and the same thing by ktubat isha. Ktubat isha should, by definition, have a lien on all the husband's property. What happens if that's not written into the ktubah? So again, it could be a tug sofer, and we say automatically any ktubat isha says. Otherwise, it could be, no, that you have the option in ktubat isha to leave out the placing of a lien on all the husband's property or not, and over here you leave it out, left it out. So in the cases where you left out the ability to get a lien by a chov, or a lien to get a, by the ktubat isha, that would mean that I can only go and collect out of the unencumbered property, property that was not bought yet, whatever's left in the estate, that's what I can go and get. Now, the Gemara says, who is, manchmai is, it's clear from this price that enumerates these five things, who's the one who says, achrayut, left out sofer who? Who's the one who says that achrayut, when the leaving out of the lien from the debt document, and from the get, from the ktubat isha, that is not a mistake, that is intentional, and it stands. Who's of that opinion? That is Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir must be the author of this brisa, because Rabbi Meir is the one who has that position that it's not a ta'ut sofer, it's not a mistake when you leave out that lien. You get, when you left it out, that is it, you don't get a lien. So that explains to us the latter two cases in the Mishnah. Biktani. Now, the first two cases in the Mishnah, what are they? Perot. V'shevach perot. Right, in the beginning of the right, so we mentioned Perot and Shevach Perot. So now what is Perot and Shevach Perot? So the Mishnah in Gittin says that in Mosin Achilat Perot, or the Sheva Karkarot, Mechatim Mishubadim, if Neitu Kunuga. Right, when it comes to eating a perot, the ability to get, or to get the value of the perot, and to the shevach perot, the shevach karkaot means the increased value of karkaot. Over there we say you can't go back and collect from encumbered property. Why? We say tikkun olam. Right, that would have been a problem that would have caused huge issues for buyers. Right, buyers can assess, when they look at a certain person's you know, economic situation, they can look at things that have quantifiable risks to the fact that someone might come and collect from them. So based on that, they can buy the property and quantify the risk. Say, I left this much property for him, I know what my risk is that it's going to be taken away. The problem with things like shevach karkaot, right, increasing the value of the karka, or peirot, which so much will come back and then try to collect, these are items that have no limits to them. These are unlimited exposure. And nobody's going to be willing to buy property knowing that there's a possibility that they could have unlimited exposure, because there's no way for them to assess the value or the risk that's associated with it. With this. So that's why by the Tikkun Olam is that by Perot and Shevach Perot, you can't go and collect from encumbered property, because that's Tikkun Olam. Now, as Mark says, what's the case? Iktani, Perot, Shevach Perot, Shevach Perot, take me, tell me. What's the case of Shevach Perot? Kugon, Shugazal Kodem Mechaveril. Person steals the property from his friend, and then sells it to a third party. Now he goes and increases the value. The buyer goes and increases the value of this property. Now this buyer loses the property because the owner shows up and says, thank you very much, that's my property, and he takes his property back. Now who does the buyer have recourse against? The gazlan. He goes back to the gazlan and says, you got to pay me two things. You got to pay me for the property, but you also got to pay me for the value that is shvach that I increased here. So now, kushu goveh, when he goes back to the gazlan to collect, goveh hakeren minechatsim mishubadim. That he can go collect. The keren, the property that he bought, right, he can go back and collect from encumbered property. Why? Because the buyers who came after him, right, could have quantified this. They knew that this buyer bought before them and there was recourse in his contract. That means they know that they're exposed to at least hit the value of his property. So that's something to know. But the Shevach, but when it comes to the Shevach, the amount that's in excess of the Karen that he sold him originally, that he can only collect out of the Gazlan, unencumbered property, is free and clear stuff. The Ata Balara, Veshakil Arei, right? So, and the, because the original owner comes and takes his land, Ushvachet, and they increase the value. So now, what's the case here? What's the case? This is an example that Rashi gave us as being a case of shogeg. Remember in the previous example, Rashi defined what's a shogeg? A case of someone steals property and then sells it to the third party. The third party then goes and increases the value. So that's what we have over here. It's my love, ba'am aretz. Right? So this is by Am aretz. The lo yodo, the karka nigzelos, when it nigzelos. That he doesn't know whether property can be stolen or not stolen. So he thinks, listen, this guy might have stolen the property, but he owns it now because he stole it. He's shinoa, he's koneh the property, and when he sells it to me, I'm buying it from the gazlan, he owns it now. What he owes the balim, that's a separate issue. He doesn't know this. And nevertheless, ka'ati balakark v'shalka da'aro shvacha. And nevertheless, the owner of the property can come and take back his property with the sheva. What do we see? We see that, v'shvamina, b'shogeg nami kanis. Right, that there is a knas, even by a case of shogeg, because this buyer here is a shogeg. And nevertheless, he loses not only the karka, but he loses the shevach. He gets no compensation for the shevach here. Technically, if you had said there's no knas here, it should be, quote-unquote, kishat hagzelah. If it's kishat hagzelah, basically the property should go back to the owner, and the owner should have to compensate him at least for his hotzaot, at least for his expenses, right, that he laid out here for the shevach. But even for the shevach itself, he's now getting back a property that's worth 120% of what was stolen. So he should get back his 100% property, and the additional 20% he should have to compensate the buyer for that amount, because it's nothing that he lost, and the buyer is the one who created this extra shevach over here. But nevertheless, he would be in a much better situation if he was not konetim, that he could keep the karka. He could keep the karka over here. So that would show us that even by shugeg there is a knas. And we let, you lose everything, you lose the shevach. Now, Tosfos over here discusses on the previous Amud whether the shevach that we're discussing over here is, Rashi seems to indicate the shevach means everything. And when he gives it back, he gives back the karka with all the shevach. Tosfos says, no, that you have to take shevach minus the yitziyot. It's clear here that the lokeach does not lose his investment in the property. He put money out, and now there's shevach that is in excess of his hotzeos. So Tosfos says you can't suggest that what he's going to lose here is the karka and the money invested in the property. True, you could say to him, you invested money, and now it's worth even more than your investment. That you could lose the additional, the value that you created. But the hotzeos, you should definitely get that money. So Tosfos discusses why over here, do we think that it is the entire amount, or is it just the excess beyond the tzios? So from Rashi, it sounds like you get everything back, meaning that he loses everything, including the expenditures that he invested over here. So now, the Gemara says, well, you don't have to say like this, but lokeach tamut chacham v'yada. I don't know what type of tamut chacham is exactly, but he knew. He knew it was high property. He knew that the karka was stolen. He knows that karka ain't an exelot. If karka ain't an exelot, he knows when he's investing in the property that he's taking risks. That if the Balim show up over here, they're going to take this property back, and he's going to lose everything, because he never was, there's no Kenyan over here, and when he's investing in someone else's property. Alright, Tashma. So let's bring a proof from the case we had before, that should be the answer, because the way I explained it to you before, that should be the answer, which is, Litzva lo Edom, Utzva o Shachor. He hired him to make it red, and he made it black. Shachor Utzva lo Edom, he hired him to make it black, makes it red, or the Meir Omer, no Dem no Demei Tzmaro. All he has to pay for is the wool. Demei tzmaro in. Demei tzmaro shvachol. No. Yitzal kadat chal b'shogeg nami kanitz. Demei tzmaro shvachol. By the mitzvah, if you say there's a knas, even by a kiss of shogeg, then he should have to pay for it. Because that's the way we explained it before. That when the craftsman went ahead and changed the color, he didn't do that intentionally to steal it. He didn't, right, he wasn't a chote, he made a mistake. It was a bad mistake, he should have been more careful. So he's a shogeg. In that case, we were not kaneis by mezid. But I made it clear to you that by shogeg, he wouldn't be niknas. There it shows you, basically, that a mayor believes the knas is only applicable by a mezid, and not applicable by a shogeg. So that should be our proof, that elolav shmamina be mezid kaneis, be shogeg lo kaneis shmamina. So that's the case that of shogeg. Look and rash again, tzva'o shogeg chashivle. Why is he considered a shogeg? So in the previous Talmud, Rashi qualified him and said that he was a shogeg because he's not a gazlan and he's not a chote. Rashi over here says the reason he's a shogeg. The ike in she tuva to lo yadei the also the shnos bidubur shel balavayis. So Rashi over here, which the Rashi in the previous Talmud said seemed to indicate it was unintentional, that he made a mistake and it was unintentional. Rashi over here seems to indicate that it was intentional. That he made it, but he thought that, you know, it's okay, he's not to listen to the balabai. What does it matter? He thinks he wants red. I know he wants black. I mean, that's it. We know better. Right, so that's the, it's interesting the ratio here changes the definition of what the shikiga is. Before the shikiga, because he made a mistake, he should have been more careful, he made a mistake. Over here, the mistake is that he didn't listen to the balabai. That was intentional. Right.
That's what's going to happen.
Right. He was made a Kenyan, but it's still considered a shogeg. Why is it considered a shogeg? Because he doesn't know that it's asur lishnos to mean balabai. It's asur to change what the balabai wants. When the balabai says something, he really wants that. And so that's it's just an interesting difference in the two rashis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, k'zeilah chozeret b'nei, Rabbi Shimon Omer, ro'in atak yidu hi shuma itzlo b'kesef. My b'nayu. What's the difference here between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Gzela Chazer Beinei means sounds like it goes back like it is. Hari Shalchala Panechah was explained by Rashi. You still have to pay the Shevach that was there at the time that he sold. What happens if he gave birth? You can't just hand back the animal and say Hari Shalchala Panechah because nobody pays less than Shasa Gzela. So Rabbi Yehuda says, he returns the animal, he's got to pay for the Shevach. What does Rabbi Shimon say? Rabbi Shimon says he's got to pay Kishasa Gzela. So they're both saying the exact same thing, which is you pay Kishasa Gzela. So what's the difference between them? So Amar Abzvid, b'shevach shal gavei gzela kamiflagei. They're arguing about the shevach, and then it's in excess of the gzela. Why Rabbi Yehuda sabar the nigzal habi, that the shevach in excess of the time of the gzela belongs to the original owner. Rabbi Shimon sabar the gazlan habi, that it belongs to the gazlan. It belongs to the thief himself. So what is this? This is Rashi. There's a Rashi over here. The Rabbi Yehuda sabar the nigzal habi. What does that mean? Right? Whatever it is, at the time that he gets an invasion, he choser. And when the value went down, or he sheared it or gave birth, Mishalem Pachta, then he has to pay for the deterioration of value. But the Hadar Kamatabi Lay Nigzal to make his Abu Bar, she goes only a minute, because the Nigzal is going to go back and ask him for that money. Uplige ad the Rabbi Meir, Damar Kule Shvachai Havle. Because according to Rabbi Meir, you have to give him the entire Shevach. Va'afogav the Kana Giza, Vlad the Shinui. Even though there was a kinyan of Shinoi, Chazin and Leikaman the Kule Shvacha Kati Allah. We look as if everything was still there. Mishlo Nigzal, Mishalem Kula Mishum Kansa. According to Rabbi Meir, you pay for everything. Even we look at it, the animal as if it continued to grow its wool, as if it went to full term. And if you pay for the additional value that accrued. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, you hand the animal back, and then you have to compensate for the difference between the current value of the animal and the time that it was b'kshat gzela. Become Rabbi Yehuda, kid ita hashta hadra. No, it goes back like it is today. Right? He pays him back the money. Demikara of the original time, the kind of gizav of Vlad Bishinoi. But what happens, this is where the Nachman is coming back, what happens if all the stuff is there? So what we explained so far is what a case where he sheared it already. If he shears it already, or if the animal gave birth, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon agree that you pay, you give the animal back, and you got to compensate for the differential between what the animal is currently worth and what it was worth at that moment that it had all this stuff on it. Right? And Rabbi Meir says no. Rabbi Meir says you pay him as if you see the animal went to full term, pay him as if the gizot went where it continued to grow, because that's the knas that we impose on you. What's the difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda comes up in this case. What happens if the animal was not sheared? The animal continued to, its hair continued to grow, or the pregnancy continued to term, but it hasn't given birth yet, or it hasn't been sheared yet. So now you have an animal whose value is increased in the hands of the gazelan. Who does that increased value belong to? So that's what Rav says the machlokas is. Veheicha, the dying kol shevach alei, if all the value is now still on the animal, chozeret kemot shehi, goes back like it is. That is the position of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, give it back like it is. Give it back like it is, that means that even with the new increased value, you hand it back. So who does that belong to? The shevach now belongs to the nigzal. And then after Rav Shimon Lemer, no. Afilu shevach alei, no gazlan. The gazlan was koneh at the shatag zeila. So any increased value from the time of the gzila going forward belongs to the gazlan, because of shinoi koneh. So according to Rav Zvid, the difference between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda is a case where everybody agrees that shinoi is koneh, but over here what happened, we have an interesting case where the animal value continued to increase, but nothing, it's almost shvacha de memela. Shevach that went up in value because the animal continued to have its wool grow or continued to be pregnant, and it extended the pregnancy or the wool. So that extension of value, who does that belong to? Does it belong to the gazlan? Because Shino Koneh, that's what Rabbi Shimon says. He just says, no, if the animal's here, and we're going to hand the animal back and say, Arishal Chalef Necha anyway, then let him get the increased value, go back to the nigzal. So that's the position of Rabbi Zvid. Rav Papa Amar, no. The Kuli Alma Shevach Shal Gabi Gzilad, the gazlan habis. Now everybody agrees that shinoi koneh. That the moment that shinoi is koneh, there's nothing to talk about. And what's the machlokas over here? The mechzel b'shlishu l'riyah k'mitzlagi. They're arguing about whether the gazlan or the should get a percentage in the profits. What does that mean? Rabbi Yehuda savar shevach shal gabi gzeila kulei gazlan. That the shevach that's on the gzeila all belongs to the gazlan. The gazlan basically gets paid like a partner in business. What does that mean? That if you have a partnership, or this was common in their time, I'm sure today, but if you, say, for instance, a property investor, you get, somebody gives you money to go and invest in the property. So now the property value goes up. That belongs to the investor. The investor is the one who bought the property. But the person who's doing the investing, the manager, will get a percentage of that value because he chose the property and he made the good investment. He'll get, here it's a question of a third, 33%, a quarter, 25%, a half, which is 50%. He'll get some percentage of the increased value because he was the one who managed the money and got the property. So also over here, the value that's being increased here, the gazlan claims it's under my watch. I increased the value because I couldn't have the animal, mishat kizela. So now I'm increasing the value. Now truthfully, the animal belongs to the original balim in some sense, right? He stole it from them. So basically, he becomes an investor for the balim. He's taking the balim's animal and he's investing it. So he invested, and now the animal went up in value. So now when the animal goes up in value, does he get to keep it all? That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. He's a gazlan, he was koneh to shinoi, keeps it all. Shimon says, no, the gazlan, we look at him as if he's a manager of the animal, and he's investing, increasing the value. So if he's a manager of the animal, he gets a percentage, like any other investor would get. He gets a percentage return on the animal, and he'll collect that percentage, because he's investing on behalf of the Bali. we have a mission. Gazal para v'nitabra isko, which is our Mishnah, right? He steals a perah, and it became impregnated, v'yelda, and then it gives birth. Rachel v'nitana, that he stole a Rachel, and then its wool grew, it's low, by the gazlan, because it's up, and then he shears it. Mishalem k'shatak zela, pays like the shatak zela, which is an animal that had no value, right? Yelda, in, lo yelda, that sounds like if it only if it gave birth. But, lo yelda, if it did not give birth yet, hadra beina, and then it goes back like it is. I mean, it sounds like from our Mishnah that the reason that you return the animal as if it is, I mean, he stole an animal that had no extra value, and he's returning an animal with no extra value. So that's why he just hands him the animal and says, or he pays him the value. But that's only after he gave birth. What happens if the animal became impregnated and went up in value? From our Mishnah, it sounds like you'd have to give the animal back with the new vlad inside of it. If that's the case, who's this like? So Bishlam of the Rebbe's Vid, that Shevach has increased, right, afterwards, after the Shadak Zilah, belongs to the original Balim. I can explain the Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then, Hamai Rabbi Yehudi. Rabbi Yehuda will be the author of our Mishnah, who says that it belongs to the Nigzal. So that even though it increased in value, Reshina Koneh in the hands of the Gazlan, nevertheless, the Nigzal gets that value. Because he can say, he gives him the animal back, and the animal has this extra value embedded in it. So, but the extra value that's embedded in it, he gives it straight back. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. That would be our Mishnah. El olor of Papa, the Mark the Gazlan, Abi. Papa says, Ben Rabbi Yehuda, Ben Rabbi Shimon, that the Shevach belongs to the Gazlan, Hamani. Who's the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Yehuda, but Lo Rabbi Shimon. Neither of them can be the author of our Mishnah, because neither of them says that the increased value that happens and is still part of the animal goes back to the Bali. So, I'm going to call Papa, who had in Abi Lo Yelda. That the din in the Mishnah will apply even if it doesn't give birth. So why did the Mishnah say in the case where it got pregnant and then gave birth, and now he's returning it? I mean, it could have had a bigger case to say even while it's pregnant, he has to give it back, and he doesn't have to pay for the Ubar, he keeps the Ubar. He pays like the original value. I did not see Reisha Yelda, because the first half of the Mishnah has to use an example of Yelda. That's the Seifa Nami Yelda. So therefore, the Seifa has to use the case of Yelda. Why? What was the Reisha? Reish is a case where he steals an impregnated, the cow is already pregnant, or he steals a Rachel that's already tuna, but he has the bull in it. So there we said, even though it gives birth later on, he pays just kishat ha-gzela. Even though it's given birth, we just say, go back to shat ha-gzela. So since the first case had to be a case which was describing the yelda that it gave birth, then the safer case also is a case just for parallel structure, talks about a case of yelda, but not necessarily that's the qualification. I mean that even if it was not yelda, it would still have the same din. Okay? Tanya Kavasa de Rapapa, we have a bright that supports the tradition of Rapapa about the Machlokas din Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rehino Taki Ilu Shum'a Itzlo Bekesef, the Mechsa Lishlish Lurviya. So we have a bright that says Rabbi Shimon believes that what we look at it as if it's assigned to him like an investor. And if he's investing in SBF, he gets a, right, a half, a third, or a quarter. That shows you that, excuse me, Rabbi Shimon believes that when you give back the property, he gets a percentage. The clan gets a percentage of it, not the whole extra value. So, we're at the house of the base measures of Kahana, Yibaylon, the Rabbi Shimon. We ask, according to Rabbi Shimon, Damar the Mechsa, the Shishul of Viyahu, the Shakil Gazlan, that the Gazlan gets paid out as a half, a third, or a quarter. This was the question that David asked earlier on. When do you pay off the gazlan? Now really, the gazlan here is getting some benefit out of the other guy's property. So now he stole a para, and the para now got pregnant, and he's handing back a para that's pregnant. He gets some money, he gets a percentage of the increase in value. So he gets this percentage. How does he collect that percentage of value? Does he keep himself kidding lay? Does the main himself kidding lay? Does an exile, can he pay him cash? He can take his animal back with the pregnant, you know, blood, and say, listen, it's all mine, and I'll pay you off your percentage, your little, you know, the money you get, the percentage that you get, I'll pay you off. right? And, or does he get actually, he gets his payment out of the item that increased in value. Same thing with the karka before. When we talk about the karka and the shevach, that was the David is asking now, why should it be any better? We see that there's a possibility that the lokeach might be entitled to the shevach, mitoch karka atzmah. That he might be entitled to the extra value that he creates out of the actual property that he increased in value. Not simply that he gets paid with cash, but he actually gets it out of the property. And we answered from this. There are three people where we assess the value of the shevach. And then we pay him in cash. We don't actually give them the shevach, we pay them in cash. What are those cases? Bechor for pashut. So this isn't an inheritance. Say you have an inheritance of 12 shekel. So if an inheritance of 12 shekel, a bechor is entitled to pishnai. He gets a double portion. So you take 12, and the bechor is going to get a double portion. You divide up 4, 4, and 4. It's 3 parts of 4. The bechor will get 8, and the pashut, everybody else will get 4. That's his double portion. Now that's only true, right, if the entire amount was worth 12. What happens if the entire amount was worth something else before, and then there was shevach? After the father passed away, the estate went up in value. And that increase in value was 12 shekel. Not that the core, the karen is 12, but the actual increase in value in excess of what the property was worth when the father passed away, that goes up in 12 shekel. Now there's a din that a bechor only takes pishnayim, right? But items that are there, right, that are mukhzak and are there at the time of the death of the father. He does not get the pishnayim by shevach that the estate increased in value beyond the time that the father passed away. So now they go divide up the estate, and when they divide up the estate, he got pishnayim. So they took that 12, that was shevach, and they divided it up. And again, he got 8. And the other pashut got it 4. Now he's really not entitled to 8 and 4, he's only entitled to 6 and 6, because the shevach does not get divided up, pishnayim. So now basically the bechor is going to have to hand over 2 shekel back to the pashut to even out the compensation. So when he does that, we've given him all the property and divided up, and he got his 12 of the shevach, now he got 8. When he goes back and has to give him that 2 shekel back, we don't say to him, take karka and give him back that 2 shekel, pay him back the shekel through karka. No, we say, we assess how much excess he got. We say, cash, pay him in cash, compensation for that amount. Right now, the other case is, ubachob lukeach. Again, a bachob to a lukeach, where the bachob gets paid, you have a debtor, who sold property to a buyer, and then the creditor came and was lukeach, took out the property from the lukeach. Now, lokeach had 2 items. Lokeach has the value of the original property, plus shevach, the increased value above the value of the property that he bought. So, but when it comes to the actual property itself is taken out, then he gets to take it. The Baal Chov comes and tarets lekuchot, so the chov that he has on the mocher, and lokeach b'mesh yishbiach lokeach umisalko Baal Chov b'damim. Right, the bachov has to pay him off with the mim, notein lo d'mei shivchov, and notein lo karka b'shir shivachov. So you don't say that, okay, listen, that this karka is now worth more than the value of what you need to collect, because of shevach on it, you've increased the value beyond what it was worth to the creditor. So then you can't say that the bachov doesn't come along and say, listen, alright, we'll have to split the karka. You get a piece of the karka for the shevach, and I'll take the karka for my loan. No, he takes the entire karka, and he pays him back cash for the shevach that increased here in the value. Okay, and Baal Chov liyutomim. Same thing, Baal Chov liyutomim. This is a case where Baal Chov that gets the liyutomim, that he goes into the same way as a chov on their father. It's an obligation on their father. Their father is mishubah to them. And they increase the value of the property after the death of their father. The increased value after the death of the father does not belong to the Baal Chov, because that's something that happened after the death of the father. He has no shibud on anything that happens upon the Yitomim, and he has no shibud on anything of the Yitomim after the death of his father. So when he goes and takes the property, he doesn't just take the property and leave him a piece of the property to pay for the shevach. No, he takes the entire property and pays him cash back for the shevach that was increased in the value. So we see that you have the ability, when it comes to these types of cases, to pay off by shevach, to pay off the shevach with cash. You don't have to leave him property. So the nigzal doesn't have to leave him a piece of the property. Right, he just has to give him cash for the excess value, for the third, the half, or the percentage of value that he created over your generator. He pays him cash, and he takes back the animal with the full flood in it, or he takes back the animal with the shearings on it, or the wool on it, So that he doesn't have to split and say, oh, you get a piece of the meat here, you
what?
Get a piece of
the
meat.
How do you get that from here? We have a case of Nigzal here.
No, but it's cases of Shavach. We see cases of Shavach with Balchov and by Yisomim. Then we see increased value by Shavach that we only pay by Damim.
So, but he says, Shlosha Shalom Hen Shavach Ma'al Hassan Bedamim.
Right. So some of years it's not Da'af Kishlosha, because Tanavishir. Tanavishir, one of those examples is the case of Gazlan and Aris. There's always an exception that he left out. But basically, he's saying that Rav Mishmo established the principle. Whenever it comes to Shavach, that you can pay it out in cash. That this is not an exclusive list, but basically a principle that he's establishing that you cash out Shavach. Shavach is not something where you keep in the principle, but you get to cash out the Shavach. You take the entire property and then you cash them out to the Shavach. Okay. The Amar Lei Ravina the Ravashi, Mi Amar Shmuel, did Shmuel say about Kobo Lokeach, Gadli Shavach? Wait a minute. Right, who says that the Shmuel says that the Balkov gives to the Lokeach Shavach? Rama Shmuel, is that really true? Didn't Shmuel say, Balchov gove et Shavach? Not that he gives him back the money in the Shavach, but rather the Balchov is gove et Shavach. And he doesn't give the Lokeach anything. Meaning that the Balchov is allowed to go and take this property and keep the Shavach. I mean, the Shavach increased or accrued to the Balchov. And the buyer is entitled to nothing over here. So now you have a steer in Shmuel. One position in Shmuel says that when a buyer comes by and increases the value of the property, and the Balchov, the creditor, comes and takes the property. One says that he takes the Keren, the original value of the property, but the Shevach has got to pay the Lokeach for it. Next one says, no, the Balchov takes everything and he doesn't pay the Lokeach anything. So you have a steer in Shmuel. So my Lokeach, Kan B'Shevach Magia L'Kitzvayim, B'Shevach, Kan B'Shevach Sh'ein Magia L'Kitzvayim. That has to do with what type of Shevach we're talking about over here. Now Rashi defines what Magia L'Kitzvayim means, is to go into Wash Gadla Kol Tzarchah. So when it's a fully grown crop, right, note the little keach of the mouth. At the point where it's fully grown, and it's developed fully, then he has to pay him for it. Because the tua reached its maturity, it really no longer belongs to the property or is a part of the property. So when it's at reached full term, he's got to pay the shavach to him. But shalom agiyah can find means that it's still dependent on the karka. That's what it sounds like. It's still dependent on the karka. And since it depends on the karka, it belongs to the karka, and when the lokeach takes it, when the creditor takes it, he takes everything. So it belongs separately to the lokeach. That's the way Rashi explains it. So Tosfos does not necessarily like that, and he brings down two alternative interpretations of what Magia is confined is. He first brings the, possibly it sounds like the read, but possibly the first one says, Deish Lomar, the Shevach HaMagia LeKitfayim, Kore Davash Sofo Litalesh, Nisabe Kitfayim. It's something in the future that's going to be taken off the karka and be carried on your shoulder. So based on that answer, it has nothing to do with where the term of the tvua is. It's just something, when you put something on the karka, how permanent is it to the karka? If the increase in value of the karka is something that will not leave the karka, for instance, you brought in new planting dirt, you fertilized the karka, you did stuff that is shayach to the karka itself, and it's not going to be taken off the karka, you don't remove it from the karka itself, or you cleave the stones, you clear the areas that can be planted now, you plow the karka. Oh, that is value that is inherent to the karka and it's not going to leave the karka. That can be taken by the creditor without any problem. Now, on the other hand, when Shemagia is defined, something that would be talish in the future will be moved. For the crops that are planted on there, the intention is that not that they belong to the karka, they're going to be removed from the karka later on. So that's also like a tree. A tree is going to stay by the karka, but the fruits produced by the tree are going to be taken off. So you could differentiate even in that situation. That's one possibility to skip. Rabbi Tam says, no, Meshavich HaMagia L'Kitfayim is called Devar Baba Torah. Says the difference of Magia L'Kitfayim has to do with how much effort you have to put in to create the additional value. Whether it sounds like Rabbi Tam's talking about the difference between Shevach HaMamela and Shevach HaInvestment. Now, I don't know if it just means investment where you spend money, or is it really Torah? Torah means that you have to actually physically be in there doing the work. Or if I hire someone to do the work, that's also considered, right? It's not clear. But at least the way the Rabbeinu Tam suggests is that, which a nice differentiation is that it depends on how the Shevach came about. If the Lokeach invested that additional value in the property, certainly it should be loaned to him because he put the money in and he did the work and he made it better. On the other hand, if it happened to Shevach of the Memelah, alright, makes sense. The Lokeach got lucky, the market went up in value, and alright, fine, he's worth more to him now and he could sell it and get more money. But that's all Shevach of the Memelah. He can't make some claim that I did some work here, I really increased the value. I got lucky in the value, he's a good investor, yes. But on the other hand, he had a creditor that, you know, is equally owns the property and has first rights to this property, so when he takes it back, he gets it with the increased value. Those are the possibilities. All right. Now Gemara says, "Ah, matzim b'chol yom." We have every day matzim b'chol yom. What does that mean? That we pass in a lock every day, and it's a term that's used in Tosfos a lot. Become a kavei shmuel afilu al shavach a magila ketfayim, and we see that Shmuel takes shavach even a magila ketfayim, but he doesn't make such a differentiation. He takes everything. Amalei elokasha. Ha the matzim pei kishir arah b'shavacha. Ha the matzim pei kishir arah. Alright, so it depends what the creditor has over here. What claim does the creditor have? If the creditor only has a claim up to the value of the property, then he takes the property and he's got to compensate him for the shevach, because his claim is only up to the value of the property. On the other hand, if he has the creditor has a claim that exceeds the value of the property, and it would now include even the shevach, when he takes it, he takes the property and the shevach, because that's exactly what he has a lien on the original owner for. So you can go back now and collect out both the... Right. He can go take out the ara of the shvacha, and he keeps the key, gets to keep it. All right, we'll stop over here. There's a big Tosfos, there's a Gemara that we can do tomorrow, but at least we got through this last piece. We can start off with this tomorrow with this Lokashon in Shmuel. We'll stop over here.